to talk about the control of Echinococcus multilocularis. We all heard that foxes came closer and closer, as you can see on this picture from a canalization in a small Swiss city. And with the foxes also, this tiny little worm is coming closer to human, and not everyone is happy about that. So the control of Echinococcus multilocularis is the subject of this speech. We are living in an urbanizing world, and the landscape is more and more shaped by human influences, so it's not surprising that many animals have adapted to urban environment and now live very close to humans. As this example shows, even wild boars can live in cities like in Berlin, or raccoon dogs, bears in Romania. Or there are lynx that was for some days in the city of Zurich. So the contact between wildlife and human is also in urban area very close. And therewith we have also foxes and the small fox tapeworm. So I will talk about some epidemiological aspects, talk about different levels of control and prevention. One topic is information and communication, very important prevention tool, but possibilities also to reduce host population, last but not least about anthelmintic baiting. So I don't will talk much about this. It's another graph, we saw it in several talks. It's not the hunting statistic, it's the number of foxes found dead by traffic in Switzerland. Maybe this is not influenced by the hunting pressure, it's more influenced by the traffic amount, but it gives another estimate of this huge increase of fox population, which in these terms is 7 times higher than it was in the 1970s. But we have, again, with this measure, a slight decline during the last years, like also in other countries. But it's interesting to see the example of the fox population in the city of Zurich. Here we still have a slight increase during the last years, and I think in many other cities where the development of urban fox population started later, we still will have an increase of fox populations in close vicinity to humans. This development already Alexander Schweiger showed, decline of the incidence of human alveolar echinococcosis, and then a rise of the incidence. And in urban area, it looks a bit different. We always had a low incidence, and now the incidence is also increasing. So what can we do? There are different levels to control the parasite or to prevention. One prevention for sure is just communication, to recommend the measures which everyone can do its own. It's these hygiene measurements. An important point is also the dogs. As we know now that dogs are important risk factors because they also like to predate on rodents, but they also can transmit the eggs of A. multilocularis by this behavior. We don't know which is more important, but from the work from Peter Cairn and colleagues, we know that dog ownership, free-roaming dog, is a risk factor, and also irregular deworming of dogs is a risk factor for human alveolar echinococcosis. Bruno gave us yesterday very impressive data about the amount of dog feces from infected dogs. It's even if we have a low prevalence of 0.3% around in Switzerland and also in Germany, it's in many countries very similar. You have to be aware that in Switzerland, for example, today 1,000 infected dogs are ranging around, or in Germany, this number means that today 10,000 infected dogs are in close contact to humans. So the low numbers is not so low. So this was an important, therefore, It was important some years ago, ESCAP was founded. ESCAP is the European Scientific Council for Companion Animal Parasites. It gives vets and pet owners the best possible information for controlling pet parasite infections and zoonosis. And it creates independent guidelines and educational material for optimal control of parasites. So important to know this website, where you have the guidelines in many different languages, including, eight languages. For example, the guidelines in French are available. There you can find the actual map of the distribution of the parasite. And important, very important, is this risk-based recommendations. For example, for Echinococcus multilocularis, if you have a free-roaming dog and it's unattended or it has access to walls, whether they are living or whether these are carcasses, it's strictly recommended a monthly deworming regime. In Switzerland, every vet has become these guidelines, and the flyers at more than 25% of the dog owners have received this information. So, but that's only one part. We can give recommendations for the public how they can protect themselves, but some actions that may could help can only be taken by a public institution. For example, we can discuss whether we can control host populations, for example, the intermediate hosts. I will not talk much about it because the history of agriculture shows that it's very difficult to really control walls. And I think we don't will discuss about poisoning actions. That's today not really a tool that we can consider. So another possibility is the control of fox population. Is it by culling? Maybe we could limit food resources. I will not talk about this. But I will also talk about behavioral aspects that are linked to the culling actions. So can foxes be controlled by culling? They can. Different studies have shown that it can be done with really intensive culling in a small area for a long period. You can have some effect, but many studies also have shown that it's very difficult to achieve it on a large scale. And that has different reasons. As you can see, foxes are quite productive. After 1 year, they can have plenty of youngs. And if they are shot, they can even produce more offspring. So they are some compensatory mechanism playing a role. And you have to be aware that during the first life, most of foxes stay anyway. So many foxes that you shoot, they would have been dead before they start reproduction. Another aspect is also that if you have a high density foxes, and that's the situation now in most parts of Europe, foxes start to build families. So not every fox is reproducing. And if you shoot the fox, another fox can take the place and reproduce. So these are mechanisms that makes it more difficult to regulate these species. I will show you only some numbers from the city of Zurich. Zurich there are three game wardens working in different parts of the city, and the western part is divided by the river of the Limmat. We know from a genetical study that we don't have a lot of exchange between these different areas. And what you see here is how many foxes are shot per square kilometers during the period from 1996, when the fox population was quite low and increased during this period. And these two game wardens shot quite intensively. another game warden, they don't like shooting very much, and so correspondingly not a lot of shooting. And here on the graph below, I hope you see it from behind, in each compartment the number of foxes found dead increased steeply. So we did not see, at least at this level of control, we don't see any influence of culling on the number of fox and on the increasing fox populations. Another problem that makes it difficult, especially in urban areas, is many people like foxes, as you can see on this picture, and they don't like that someone shoots their foxes. We made an inquiry in the neighborhood of active fox dens. We asked people about their opinion about the foxes, and we thought that in this area you have a lot of problems. The foxes are stealing things in the garden, they can distribute rubbish, the people are aware of the disease. Even so 41% have a positive attitude towards the urban foxes. And only 10% is clearly negative, and a huge amount, 30%, has an ambivalent attitude. They are aware that there are risks, that there are problems, but they also like the foxes. Another aspect is, if we are talking about hunting, is that urban foxes profit if they manage to adapt their behavior to the disturbances in the urban area. So you can see that on this picture. Here is a fox sleeping. Sorry, the light is not very clear. I hope you can see it. Here is my colleague, very close to the fox. And you can see he just can go stand to the fox 1 meter away, and the fox does not flee. May you think this fox is ill, but this fox we observed for about 3 hours during night, and it was very active, then it was taking a rest, and we could follow it. It was really nice to observe. So, and many other people also like to have experiences like that. So that's an adaptation of the fox behavior, and that enables them also to exploit better the resources in urban areas. They can even come to the apartments and take the food of the cat. So that's an advantage for these foxes. Now, we tried, whenever we had an encounter with such foxes, we tried to approach them and noted how many meters we could approach to the fox. And we did this in the whole town. And what we saw is, that was surprising for us, that we found a significant effect, that it was possible in the western part where shooting is very low, we had the possibility to go closer to the foxes. So that's maybe another effect of hunting that is not discussed much, but this certainly influences also the possibility of foxes to exploit urban areas. So, last but not least, I want to give some information about the deworming of foxes. In many countries, and many of you were involved in studies like that, I will primarily refer on the experience that we have done in Zurich. We have one problem. It's not the same as control of rabies. It's not the vaccination, so the dewormed fox can get an infection 1 day after he took a bait. And you have three living stages, in the eggs and in the intermediate host, that are not affected directly by the treatment. So the parasite can survive during a treatment period over 2 years and even more, possibly. So long-term treatment, a very intense control by anthelmintic is baited, needed to have any effect. Because you have to spend a lot of effort in the control, you have to ask, where do I spend this effort? Where do I best to limit the expenses? So I will refer here on the special rule of urbanized areas. I hope you can see it.
Is it visible?
Okay. You have a high food supply in urban areas, and therefore you have a really high fox density. For example, in the city of Zurich, we know it's more than 11 adult foxes per square kilometers. And in the same time, you have small home ranges. This means also a small spatial dynamic of the parasite. In urban peripheries, you frequently in Europe have grassland, permanent grassland, meadows, and you have good wall habitats. So we have the rural habitat and the urban habitat, and in the transition zone, we have really that what fox typeworm likes most. It's an optimal habitat for this species, a high abundance of both host species. You can see this also on this slide. You can see the Lake of Zurich, the urbanized area. Here a lot of meadows and pastures around the city. For example, in the intermediate host Arvicola terrestris, we see here a prevalence of 13%, 23%. And 2 years ago, we found in one area a prevalence of 61%. That's an incredible number, and this shows also that this is really a good habitat, as we saw before. We measured in this area, here you can see the city of Zurich, a pasture in the periphery. I don't know if you see it. Here is a burrow of Arvicola terrestris. On the top you see a fox shit, a dropping of fox, and we have the impression that foxes really like to mark these burrows. We tried to quantify this. We marked about 1,000 places so far. The studies, these are preliminary results, the study is going on. We marked 500 random points of meadows in the urban periphery and more than 500 burrows of Arvicola terrestris. And we looked in a defined circle where we could look very carefully to not miss any feces, how many feces we find on a certain area. So in the short, in random point in short grass, we find 0.02 fox droppings per square kilometers, and on 13 burrows we find a density of 0.11 fox density per square kilometer. So per 10 square kilometers burrows like this, we find one fox dropping. That's a quite high density. We removed all these fox droppings, and after a certain period, we visited exactly the same places to estimate the temporal input of new feces. But for this, I think the sample is still too small, so I will not show this number now. So we still stay in this optimal a multilocularis habitat and ask the question, where do most people live? Alexander Schweiger gave us already a feature that only about 25% of the people are living in a rural area. The rest is living in cities, in big cities, and in urban peripheries or small villages. About 12% in big cities, they may are a bit far away from wall habitat, so not at high risk, but the rest, over about 60% of persons, is living really in this transition zone between rural and urban habitat. Then we can ask, is this a big area? I plotted here a graph where you can see the area of Switzerland. It's 42,000 square kilometers. And here, which amount of the population is living in this area? And you can see that 85% of people are living in only 10% of the Swiss area. So the area is quite small. And a certain area is also not very exposed to the parasite because it's a very central urban areas, or whether the other conditions are not good for the parasite. So May, the really area that we should focus on is quite small. So that's also the reason, and many of you also have known this study or the first part of this study. That's the reason why we defined baiting areas around the city where we distributed every month or in regular interval 50 baits per square kilometer. Is it visible? Sorry.
Okay.
Now you have to concentrate. It's difficult now without the symbols. Because this study had two phases. In the first phase, we baited every month 50 baits per square kilometers. Then in some parts of the study areas, we changed the intervals to 3 months intervals. And we wanted to know whether we have really to do the effort to do it every month or if it's enough every 3 months. And we sampled before treatment, at the end of the monthly baiting, about 19 months, and at the end of period 2 in September 2003, about 26 months later, and also in two areas, 3 years after the end of any baiting. I profit from the clouds. This symbol means monthly baiting during the whole period. This monthly baiting, every 3 months baiting, the control area, afterwards every 3 months baiting, monthly baiting and no baits, Okay. So we have these different plots, and they were distributed around the city of Zurich. And now I will show you what was the result. Before treatment, we had no difference between these areas. For those who can see it, here are the different symbols. Here is the control area for the whole period, and here is the monthly baiting during the whole period. Now, what was the situation at the end of phase one? In monthly baiting, after this and this plots were baited monthly. These three were baited monthly during phase one. In all three sample area types, the number of portion of coproantigen positive feces dropped drastically. In the control areas, it remained stable. Important, at this stage, we already had much lower reinfection pressure by the walls. We trapped a lot of walls, and we saw that Arvicola terrestris in the baited areas have a much lower prevalence than in the control areas. Now, phase two, we rearranged the baiting scheme according to the first slide I showed you for this field trial. And you see now that in this area, we continued with monthly baiting. It remained on a low level. Here we changed from monthly baiting to baiting every 3 months. It increased significantly. Where it was controlled before, it decreased in 3 months intervals, but not to a very low level, to a similar level as this areas. And where we changed from monthly baiting to no bait, it increased to the control level. So we see that baiting in 3 months is effective to some extent, but we can say it's too far to really have too less to really have a control effect. But what is very interesting and was very surprising for us is that after 3 years, we stopped baiting in all areas. 3 years after, we sampled fox feces in the control areas and in the areas that were baited during the whole period in monthly intervals. And there, the number of positive feces was still very low. And it's an example, possibly we have here really a long-term effect of the baiting, what would be very surprising, but that's an indication that this could happen. And we think that's an important result that should be controlled by other experiments. As we now know that baiting in 3 months interval is not very effective, we ask the question, are there certain seasons that are better for baiting? The theory says that, or we know that during cold and wet conditions, eggs survive for a long period. So the hypothesis is that most wolves get infected during winter season. We try to address, and therefore, baiting during winter, autumn and winter, could be better, because there you get all the infective material for the wolves to the environment. So we asked this question and trapped around 850 Arvicola terrestris and made age estimates based on the A-lens weight. And for each wolf, we considered the date of birth. So we could follow the individual history of each wolf and see whether wolves that live in a cold period have a higher probability to be infected. And this is what happened. You see, the living time during winter was a very important predictor whether a rodent is infected or not. And especially young animals living during winter were much more frequently infected than other individuals that are living during summer. So this is an option maybe in another study to control whether a seasonal baiting scheme with a special focus on autumn and winter maybe is more effective and can save costs. I think I'm a bit late. Okay. Actually, a long-term baiting study is going. I only will shortly make some reflections about the costs. The baiting. I will not go to the detailed numbers, but about if we would treat the whole city of Zurich, we should treat about 40% of the area of Zurich, and this is 37 kilometers, and we have the working hour costs, and we have the bait costs, everything, and if we sum up, we would have spend 43,000 euro per year to treat the whole city. So this is, if we do this really intense baiting. We know from the work from Paul Torgerson and colleague that the cost disease in Switzerland is 108,000 euro, the total cost for a patient. So you see, if you could save a patient, in theory, you could pay 1 year of baiting. And the actual incidence that we have means that every year we can expect in Zurich one new case. So, but we see in the first year, and because the treatment before diagnosis 10 years will pass, the first maybe 10 years you will have costs and you will not have any effect. So only a long term, a really long term, control would be cost-effective, but then it could be quite cost-effective in a long term only. Okay, so some conclusions. Information should be considered as an important tool for prevention. Monthly treatment of dogs with access to wool is very important. In some areas, we still can expect increase of the fox population, especially in urban areas. The control of intermediate and final host is difficult to achieve, and until mintic baiting is a feasible control option. There we have to focus or should think to prioritize the transition zone from rural to urban areas where the most people are living, and control by baiting should focus on this area where in these transition zones. We have one indication for a possible long-term effect of baiting. If this holds true, that would be an important option to really lower this treatment or control costs. So cost effect if could be a treatment in a long term. Thank you. And I have to thank to all these many people who are involved in this work.
Thank you very much for this very interesting and comprehensive presentation. But for me, I mean, when we talk about controlled strategies, it's obvious. I think you have covered very well. I mean, this the complex cycle, both on the wildlife cycle and with the dogs, and also eventually on the human side. Because I mean, I suppose that obviously the aim of the control is to reduce human exposure. But to do that, you need to do that in several, say. Try to combine efforts in the whole complex. So, okay, are there any questions now? Yes, please.